Welcome to another installment of the Permaculture Lifestyle Podcast, where we explore the daily pursuits of self-reliance, natural living, and ecological thinking. I'm your host, Sam Sycamore, coming to you as always from my humble homestead outpost in Simpsonville, Kentucky, this time on a cold but pretty sunny morning in late January. I want to try to do things a little bit differently today. You may have noticed in the first four episodes of the show, I probably sounded kind of stiff, maybe, and that's because I was basically reading from a script. The first three episodes were blog posts that I'd written for my website, permaculturelifestyle.com, and last week's episode was a piece that I wrote specifically to be a podcast, but nonetheless, it was a script that I'd written out ahead of time. So I want to just try to kind of speak off the cuff today. I do have a set of notes in front of me to keep myself from rambling too much. But today I want to talk about intentions. What are the root intentions of permaculture? How do our intentions shape our behavior? And how does that inform our culture? I want to talk about how our culture relates to its environment, and what our culture and our environment today look like through this framework. And from there, I want to offer some advice for how we as individuals can take control of our intentions and shape our intentions, and how that in turn can lead to the culture that we wish to see in the world today. So I started thinking about this idea over the last week while reading Permaculture 2, published by Bill Mollison in the early 80s. I had never picked up Permaculture 2 before this, and it really doesn't get cited very often, so I didn't know a whole lot about what was contained within. It seems to me that Mollison was interested in expanding on the philosophical ideas of permaculture in a lot of ways in this book, and he cites Fukuoka quite frequently, Fukuoka being the writer of The One Straw Revolution, and the progenitor of the idea of natural farming, sometimes translated as do-nothing farming, but that's not a very good way of describing it. Fukuoka wrote his book, The One Straw Revolution, in the same year that Mollison and Holmgren published Permaculture One, and there's so much overlap between them, it's pretty incredible that they were operating independently of one another. But by Permaculture Two, it's clear that Mollison had read Fukuoka's work and admired it quite a bit. He cites Fukuoka frequently throughout this text, and I started thinking more about the influence of Eastern philosophy on permaculture. Fukuoka makes no attempt to hide that his farming philosophy is highly influenced by Taoism and Zen Buddhism, and you can see those types of things pop in through permaculture too. Especially, I see it quite often in Holmgren's Permaculture Principles and Pathways book. He speaks of Taoism and of animism. And I've never read Mollison's autobiography. I haven't been able to get my hands on a copy, so it's quite possible that he discusses these things directly in that book. I also know it's something like 900 pages long, so I guess he probably talks about a lot of things in that book. But I still think, regardless of how Bill Mollison ultimately feels about Eastern philosophy, I think we can learn a lot by critically examining the ways that permaculture and Eastern ideas kind of overlap and what that says about the inner landscape design that I'm sort of aiming to elucidate through this show. So what are intentions? For that matter, what is culture? Our intention, I would argue, shapes our behavior, which in turn shapes our culture. And more than simply ecological gardening or ecological engineering, I think permaculture is a thorough reimagining of how our culture organizes itself. And that's why I'm so interested in this idea of intentions. In permaculture, we speak often of the idea of top-down thinking and bottom-up solutions. You know, the idea that we observe the greater systems at play, and then we make changes at the individual and the community level. This idea of think globally, act locally. And when we observe the world around us through that framework, it becomes clear that our intentions as individuals are what shape our culture. I want to quote a Zen Buddhist teaching I came across last summer. Unfortunately, I don't know the source. I can't remember. I didn't write it down anywhere. I just remember that it was a Zen podcast that I'd stumbled upon while I was working on the farm one day. And it goes something like this. Intentions form thoughts and words. Thoughts and words lead to actions. Actions become behavior. Behavior shapes our personality. And over time, our personality hardens into what we look like. So the question that I'm interested in looking at today is, what does our culture look like? And from that, we can start to get an idea of what are our culture's intentions. But before we go any further, I should probably define my idea of culture so that we're on the same page here. So what is culture? Culture ultimately is a response to an environment. You have a group of people occupying a space, responding to their environment. And that's how we get myths, that's how we get rituals, that's how behaviors and thought patterns and beliefs become solidified. And that ultimately is our culture, a response to the environment. So what is our culture's environment? I think Holmgren puts it really well in Permaculture Principles. He says that the culture of today is a culture of no place, no environment. In the modern era, most humans don't interact with the natural world. They're interacting with a built environment. And what does that built environment teach us to do? Consume. When I think about the built environment around us today, you know, I think about McDonald's, Walmart, Circle K, the inside of a car, an interstate highway with wall-to-wall traffic. These are places where there is no environment. There's no natural world around you. It's only things that humans have built. There are no living things other than other humans and maybe some of the pest animals that follow us around where we go. But when you walk into a McDonald's, you could be anywhere on planet Earth and you will have the exact same experience. That's what I mean by no place. And so what kind of culture arises from this built environment of no place? Well, I think it's pretty clear that the culture that arises is one of instant gratification, quick dopamine fixes at the push of a button, and a profound sense of entitlement. I've been struggling with this idea of entitlement because I think it carries a lot of connotations in the modern world about things like white privilege and race and class. But what I'm getting at is more like an existential entitlement. This idea that I exist, therefore things need to be given to me, and I shouldn't do anything to earn them or to justify my taking of them. Now, this is a very ill culture, and I think it's because people aren't receiving the stimuli that they're adapted to receive. When you're walking through the downtown of any city and you're surrounded by skyscrapers and cars and just sea of people, your body doesn't know what to do with that information. It doesn't make any sense. The only way that we can even get by in those sorts of built environments is through conditioning. You know, but cultural conditioning only desensitizes us. It doesn't adapt us to that experience. It just numbs us to them. And I would argue that no culture can thrive this way. It's just not possible. So how did we get here? Following the principle of top-down thinking and bottom-up solutions, I would argue that we got here through the intentions of individuals, which in turn shape the intentions of our culture and what our culture looks like. So what are the intentions of our culture today? Once again, I would say that it is to consume, ultimately, to exploit resources. You know, we go out into the natural world to take, to turn diverse biomass into humans. We go into the rainforest and we chop down all the trees and we kill all the animals there, and then we plant corn and soy and wheat, and then we consume it. We are turning the natural world into people. And this is a positive feedback loop. You teach people this paradigm of consumption and they will proliferate it as long as it leads to short-term gains in material well-being, because that's all we're concerned about. We're not looking at long-term solutions. We want to know that we are going to eat tomorrow, and we live in this culture of scarcity that has convinced us that we may not eat tomorrow. We've seen the destruction that arises from this sort of behavior as a result. But we can change course. How do we do that? Through our intentions as individuals. We have the power to realign our intentions as individuals and communities and to come together to create meaningful change in our environments through the shared values and ethics of earth care, people care, and fair share, which unite all of us as one human race. It all begins with intention. So what do you think the intentions of Bill Mollison were in developing permaculture? That's a question I've been considering quite a bit in the last week. It's clear that Mollison and Holmgren were interested in a lot more than just ecological gardening or ecological engineering, as I mentioned at the top. I think that permaculture is an attempt to thoroughly reimagine the way that humans interact with our environment and how this, in turn, affects our culture. So I've been trying to put into words these underlying intentions that I see in the writings of Mollison, as well as Holmgren and Masanobu Fukuoka. And there are three that really stick out to me that I see permeating permaculture, natural farming, the beyond organic movement, all of that. The first one is trust that nature knows better than humans do. Number two, I would say, is leave every place better than we found it. And the third would be to reconnect what has been disconnected. I really think that you find these themes throughout the permaculture literature in the principles and in the ethics. I prefer phrasing them this way rather than falling back on the sort of institutionalized, let's say, principles and ethics, because I see these ideas as the core concepts that underlie this entire design system. I think they have really broad implications for landscape design as well as cultural design. You know, I speak often of the outer landscape versus the inner landscape, and I think that these three ideas have very profound implications for how we approach both of those things. So how then do we as individuals set intentions? That's a really tricky question, because it's the sort of thing where if you haven't truly integrated these ideas, it just comes off as phony. It's disingenuous. So the way that we can set our intentions is through mindfulness practice. And I don't consider this a religious thing. It's not like a new agey type of thing. It's a very real phenomenon. And I believe that mindfulness practice is the root of all change. So how do we practice mindfulness? The good news is there are lots of different ways to do it. The bad news is only some of them are going to work for any individual person. So that's where it's going to take a little bit of trial and error on your part if you're interested in developing a mindfulness practice. So that said, I want to offer some advice for how to practice mindfulness by describing some of the ways that I practice mindfulness in my life. The first one, and probably the most obvious, would be meditation. And again, I'm not advocating for any specific sort of religious practice or spiritual practice. I don't subscribe to any particular religion myself, and I think that spirituality is a very personal pursuit. It should be unique and individual for each person. My wife, Brooke, wrote a great blog post for our website about meditation, and in it she describes how when she was beginning her meditation practice, she often was worried about the idea that she was doing something wrong somehow. And I've certainly felt this way too. You know, this idea that I'm not doing it properly, you know, I'm not standing up straight or I'm not sitting up straight. Should I be focusing on my breath? Should I be ignoring my breath? Should my eyes be open or closed? How long should I be here? Should I be paying attention to how long I'm here? Those sorts of things. And the answer to those questions is, it's up to you. It's important to remember that a lot of the specific cultural practices of meditation that we've inherited, a lot of them come from cultures based on hierarchical systems and class structures and these sorts of political and social constructs that don't necessarily have our best intentions in mind. So with that said, I think meditation is a very simple and effective form of taking control of your intentions. It's a very simple thing to do. All you have to do is sit down, slow down, breathe, and let your thoughts pass through your mind. Don't try to judge them. Don't try to suppress them or push them away. Just watch them pass by. If you do this long enough, you'll notice that those voices start to quiet down. The echo chamber of your mind begins to mellow out. The voices calm themselves. And it's in that place where we feel truly present, truly existing in the present moment. And that's the space where we can set intentions for ourselves as individuals to critically assess the way that we view the world, the way that we interact with the world, and to begin to shape the thoughts and words that we wish to take out into the world. Now, meditation is more than just sitting. For many years of my life, I found music to be a very meditative experience. It still is, but it used to be essentially my sole mindfulness practice, and I didn't really know that that's what it was at the time, but in retrospect, I can see that that's what I was aiming for. I would basically lock myself in a room surrounded by instruments and a microphone, and I would blink, and 8 hours would pass, and I would be thinking, my stomach feels weird. Oh, I haven't eaten the last 3 meals because I've been so focused on this present moment that I've lost all track of time. That's a really profound experience. Gardening also does this for me. I have done some of my best contemplation, I would argue, out in the fields, weeding or harvesting, whatever the case may be. In fact, I would say that a lot of these ideas that I've been sharing on the blog and through this podcast were ideas that I originally formulated while I was wandering around the fields on the farm where I work, before I ever had any notion of trying to share them with the world. I was just wandering around through the okra patch, silently transcending. My next piece of advice for practicing mindfulness would be to keep a journal. This is something that I've been doing for almost a decade now, and it's pretty cool to look back on my notebooks and see all of these things that I was thinking over the years. But more than just a historical record, I think it's a great way to critically assess your thoughts and your behaviors, your actions, your habits, and try to sort of set new goals and to realign your thoughts. If you were to look through my journals, and I would appreciate it if you didn't, but if for whatever reason you decided to look through my notebooks, you creep, you would find a lot of lists. Things like, how am I feeling today? What's bothering me this week? What sorts of things do I want to accomplish this year? Where do I see myself in 5 years? What chores do I need to get done? You know, just whatever. Lots of lists, and that is a way for me to clear up the clutter, you know, just like meditating. If you can clear out those cluttered thoughts in your mind, then you can occupy the space in the present moment where you have more power to realign your thoughts and your values. I also want to point out that this idea of intentions is a two-way street. If you'll recall the Zen Buddhist teaching from the beginning of the show, how our intentions shape our thoughts and words, and our thoughts and words, in turn, inform our actions. Well, I think it goes both ways. I think there's a certain element of faking it till you make it, you know, for lack of a better way of putting it. When we take meaningful action that aligns with the intentions that we wish to set for ourselves, that has an impact too. I think if you spend an afternoon planting trees, for example, and then you take the time to reflect on the action you've just taken, you'll begin to see how your thoughts and words shift just a little bit. When you start thinking about how a few years from now those trees could be feeding you and your family, then you will observe your intentions shifting a little bit in the direction of reconnecting what has been disconnected. When you start to contemplate the positive impact that those trees will have on the place where you planted them, you will observe your intentions shifting a little bit in the direction of leaving every place better than you found it. And once you've put those trees in the ground and you relinquish control of them, you will observe your intentions shifting just a little bit towards that idea that nature knows better than humans do, and we should trust it. We can alter the course of our culture by realigning our intentions towards a positive interaction with our environment. Since we can do it, and we're aware that we can do it, that means we have a responsibility to do it. And we also have a responsibility to share these ideas with other people. I sincerely hope you find them as useful as I do. Thanks for listening to this episode of Permaculture Lifestyle. This podcast is an extension of the blog, permaculturelifestyle.com, where my wife and I publish our writings about lifestyle design, health and wellness, producing your own food, and learning the skills and traditions of living in tune with the rhythms of the natural world. Check it out, I think you'll dig it. All music you heard today was composed by yours truly under the name Airplane Jumper. And you can find some of that music over at airplanejumper.bandcamp.com. If you enjoyed today's show, please do us a favor and rate, review, share and follow on social media, and tell your friends. And please don't hesitate to get in touch with us if you have any questions, comments, or any kind of feedback. Look for the Contact Us link at the bottom of the website. Until next time, this is Sam Sycamore reminding you that a world of abundance is waiting right outside your door. Are you ready to step out?